Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Bava Kama Daf Ayin Aleph. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins two lines from the top, the second line from the top of Daf Ayin Aleph. We quote from the Mishnah, Gonav v'tovach b'yoyim ha-kippurim, chayov dalet v'hei. A theft took place of an animal, and its slaughter was on Yom Kippur. The offender, the thief, has to pay the 4 or 5 time payment. The Gemara will continue, as you can see, with a give and take structure. How do I know that? Well, I notice triangles. And on the side of the Gemara, first we have a topic heading, which reads, Shitas Rabbi Meir, will be introduced very shortly to Rabbi Meir's opinion that says, Loike umeshalem, aval loy meis umeshalem, where an act takes place and concurrently there is a punishment of lashing, and the act was a violation of a halacha law, which results in a punishment of lashing, as well as a need for making financial restitution. Rabbi Meir holds that both can be imposed. However, you cannot have an act that results in capital punishment and financial restitution, which happen both simultaneously. Both results are simultaneous, and they're having both meted out. Rather, in the case of an act that results in a capital offense plus a financial restitution, only the capital offense is meted out. And I just repeat, however, in the case of an act that results in the two punishments of lashing and financial restitution, Rabbi Meir, as opposed to others, Rabbi Meir holds both punishments can be meted out. The case of meis umeshalem, where we say only one punishment is given, the more serious one, there's a very common rabbinic phrase that describes that as kom lei b'derabba mine. He is established as receiving the rabba mine, the greater one of the two punishments. And naturally, the execution of the offender is a greater form of punishment than the expectation of him to pay money. Now, the mivneh, the structural note, where the triangle appears, we describe as a ma'akav, an attempt to keep track of a give-and-take structure Gemara. So with the point facing up, they represent kushios, questions, and the inverted triangle, point facing down, tirutzim, answers. If you allow your eye to scan the page, you will see that this give-and-take structure continues down till the lower part of our Omid Gemara. So now the Gemara continues. We saw in the Mishnah that if the slaughtering took place on Yom Kippur, that does not diminish or exempt from the need for paying the 4-5 amount. So we know also, by way of background, and the Gemara is going to point that out immediately, that as serious as Yom Kippur is in terms of observing it and not violating it, one who does violate it does not become obligated in a capital punishment. His the Torah speaks in terms of kores. He's subjected to the kores punishment, which either means dying prematurely or his children dying. However, a capital punishment is not at all an option with regard to a Yom Kippur violator. That, by the way, is in contrast to Shabbos, where one who violates Shabbos is subject to a capital punishment. So now the Gemara asks, Amri, Amai, why on Yom Kippur, if the slaughtering of the stolen animal took place in Yom Kippur, is there a that generates a 4 or 5 payment? Nehida katla leka, granted, katla means execution. There's no execution for violating Yom Kippur. Malkus miha ika, there is lashing that is meted out because he has violated a negative command in the Torah. And if a person is warned before committing the offense and he nevertheless dismisses the warning and says, I'm going to do it anyway, and he's warned that if he violates Yom Kippur, he's subject to being lashed, there is that penalty. V'kaimalon, and we have as a principle, the Eino Lokel Meshalem, you don't subject the person to two punishments, to lashing and paying. And since he's violating Yom Kippur by slaughtering on Yom Kippur, so he's subject to getting lashed, not to also have to pay, and yet our Mishnah says he has to pay. Amri, answer, Ha'amoni Rebbe Meir, our Mishnah is authored by Rebbe Meir, or is in accordance with Rebbe Meir. The Omar Loike U'Meshalem, Rebbe Meir's opinion is that we don't say one per customer with regard to lashing, but rather lashing and payment are meted out. The Gemara asks, E Rebbe Meir, Afilu Tovach B'Shabbos, if our Mishnah is authored by Rebbe Meir, even in the case of Tovach B'Shabbos, he should be chayev to pay the 4 or 5. V'chitema, and if you try to say loike umeshalim isle meis umeshalim lesle, that Rebbe Meir holds only from loike umeshalim that we can mete out those two punishments, but execution and payment he doesn't hold from. V'hotanya, here we're going to present a Tanaic source in which we will say, we will see to the contrary. Gonav v'tovach b'Shabbos, a theft of an animal and then the subsequent slaughtering on Shabbos. Gonav v'tovach l'avodah zorah, a theft of an animal and a subsequent slaughtering as a form of idolatry. Gonav shor haniskal v'tovachoy, or a person stole an animal that is to be executed. It's a shor haniskal, that's an animal that the court found guilty of a capital offense, like killing a person, or the animal was participant in bestiality. So a person stole a shor haniskal v'tovacho and slaughtered it. Mishalim arba v'chamisha divrei Rebbe Meir. We see that here you have amongst the things seen here, the first example was a slaughtering of a stolen animal on Shabbos. Rebbe Meir says he's chayef to pay the multiple payments of 4 or 5. The Chachomim potrin, the Chachomim exempt. But if our Mishnah is authored by Rebbe Meir, then we have to take into consideration that the Mishnah has a continuation on Daf Ayin Dalet Amud Beis, where the Mishnah does speak about Tovach B'Shabbos. And yet, over there, the Mishnah says he is exempt from paying. But if our Mishnah, in order to explain Tovach B'Yom Kippur Chayav Dalvei, assigned to Rebbe Meir, based on Loiko Mishalem, then the Mishnah on Daf Ayin Dalamid Beis, which speaks about Tovach B'Shabbos, should also be Chayav Dalvei, and yet over there the Mishnah says he is exempt. But according to Rebbe Meir, you would be chayav, just like you see here explicitly, gona v'tova b'Shabbos. The Gemara responds, Amri, bar mino dehahi. That is an exception. The Gemara will explain itself. Deha itmar Allah, Omer, it was said concerning this source. Omer of Yankiv, Omer of Yochanan, Vyamrila, another version name-wise, Omer of Yirmiya, Omer of Shimon ben Lakish. The following, Rabbi Ovin, Rabbi Ila, V'chol, Chavurta, Mishmei, to Rabbi Yochanan Amri. A lot of names over here, but these rabbis said in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, the payment referred to in the brisa above, betoveach al yedei acher. The slaughterer was someone other than the thief. So that you don't have a case of meis umeshalim. What do we mean by that? When we speak about the 4-5 payment, who is making the payment? Well, the 4-5 payment is made, first of all, of kefel, the double payment that the thief must make because he stole the animal. And then an additional twice is paid in the event that the animal is slaughtered. But who will pay that extra twice amount for a total of 4 times? The thief will pay for that in the event that the animal is slaughtered. Is it of concern to us who does the slaughtering? No. As long as the slaughtering was done to the stolen animal, the thief will have to pay 4-5. So that in this particular case where we say Toveach al yedei achir, the achir, he is violating Shabbos. But the thief is not in violation of Shabbos. He didn't do an act of Shabbos violation. Someone else did that. So that you don't have a problem of meis umeshalem. To review the main point, Rabbi Meir agrees that ein meis umeshalem. Ah, but this source that speaks about of Shabbos violation and paying, because there's no meis in this case regarding the one who is going to do the paying. The one who's doing the paying is not subject to a capital offense. This answer creates a question. What are we describing then? We're describing that someone else, other than the thief, is doing the act of slaughtering and thereby violating Shabbos. And that is going to reflect upon the thief that set him up to this, that sent him to slaughter. The Gemara asks, "V'chizeh choite v'zeh mischayev?" Could it be that the agent does the sin, the slaughterer sins, he slaughters on Shabbos, and that should reflect back upon the Mishaleach, the original party that sent him, that set him up to do it, by the fact that he, the ganav who sent him, has to pay 4-5. In other words, we're saying that the ganav has to pay for the act that the other guy did, the act of sin that the other guy did. That runs counter to a very, very solid principle in Jewish law, which says ein shliach l'dvar avera, that there is no agency when it comes to a matter of sin. Namely, the action that party number two does that's of a sinful nature does not reflect back upon the one that sent him to do it. We say, in general, we say, divrei harava, divrei talmud, divrei mishomin. Who should a person listen to some human being that sends you to do a sinful act, or listen to God who commanded in his Torah not to do it? And yet, what are we saying here? We're saying that the sinful act that the slaughterer did reflects back upon the thief who sent him to slaughter. Omar Rava, Shaini Hocha. Rava says, look, in general, you're right. There is no such thing as agency when it comes to a sin, and that the acts of sin that someone does in agency for someone else don't reflect back on the original party. Here, though, it is different. Here, meaning in the within the context of Geneva, Tavicho Mechira, there is a scriptural override. Diomar Kro. You'll notice we have a series marking, a double underline. These are several. There are three sources, scriptural sources, to indicate that in this realm there is a concept of, we'll say, shliach lidvar avera, that the act of agency done by one reflects back on the original sender. And I say there's scriptural references. Let's take a look. Rava says that this is a unique situation. D'yomar kro, the pasuk says, utvachoi, oi mechoroi. In regard to the stealing of an animal, of a sheep, or an ox, the Torah says that if it's slaughtered or sold, so the thief has to pay 4/5. And you see in this pasuk that slaughtering is compared to selling. Ma mechira ayadei acher, just like in order to conduct a sale, you need to have another party. The thief is the seller, and there's an outsider who is the buyer. So just like mechira by definition needs acher, needs someone else, af tevichai de acher, so too the slaughtering in this topic that would generate a 4/5 payment can be done by someone else. So that someone else is going to do the Shabbos violation through the slaughtering, and it's going to reflect back on the thief in terms of the financial obligation. But the thief, it's quite clear, he did not do the act of Shabbos violation. So there, you don't have a situation of meis u'meshalem. Rabbi Meir in general will agree, ein meis u'meshalem. And that's reflected in the Mishnah daf ayin dalet omid beis, where it says tovach, gonav v'tovach v'shabbos is exempt from paying the 4/5. Let's continue with another scriptural reference. Debei Rabbi Shmuel Tana, in the yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel, they teach oi. The pasuk says, Tavachoy oi mecharos. That word oi is lerabois es hashaliach. That comes to include the agent as being a possibility for generating the 4/5 payment. Debei Chizkiyotona tachas. In the pasuk, it spoke. You'll see the word tachas mentioned a couple of times, and that extra reference is lerabois es hashaliach, to include an agent who does the slaughtering. So that even though in general we say ein shliach ledvar avera, when it comes to the act of slaughtering, there is agency where someone else does the act of slaughtering and it reflects back on the thief, at least insofar as obligating the thief to pay the 4/5 for someone else having done the slaughtering. We ask, Maskif lo marzutra, mi ikomidi, is there anything in law, di'ilu ovid ihu, had the ganav himself slaughtered on Shabbos, lo mechayev, he wouldn't have been chayev to pay the 4/5, the ovid shliachu mechayev, and an agent does it, and now the ganav is chayev. If you were to do it yourself, you wouldn't have been obligated to pay the 4/5. If the agent does it, so you are. That's not, there's no precedent for things like that. In other words, the agent cannot be more responsible, more guilty, or more obligated than the person himself and the thief himself. Omar le Rav Ashi, Hosom, in the case of Gonav, and the Tovach B'Shabbos, that the thief himself might have done, lav mishum, the exemption from payment there is not because the lo mechayevu, because he's exempt from payment. In truth, he's obligated to pay. Ela de Kamle, but the Rabbi Mine. But in such a case, that thief is involving himself at the same time with a greater offense, which contains within it a greater punishment. So the greater punishment, the execution, in the case that the thief himself would have done the slaughtering, that outweighs the financial obligation that exists upon him. As we said, he's not exempt from it, but we say one per customer. We can only give one punishment when it's a case of capital punishment along with financial obligation. The greater punishment is given. But just to repeat, we're not suggesting that he is exempt, that the need to pay doesn't exist upon him. The need to pay does exist, but we don't impose it upon him. We don't charge him because he's paying the higher price, namely with his life. Question. V'ibe toveach al yedei acher maitaima de rabbonon de patri. We had a source above, that brisa, that we explain why, according to Rabbi Meir, is chayav because it's not a case of mesu mishalem. Why do the rabbonon exempt the thief? Amri, answer: man chachomim. Who are the chachomim in that particular source? Rabbi Shimon. The chachomim really is Rabbi Shimon. So that happens from time to time that a singular opinion is presented using the term chachomim. It's Rabbi Shimon, the Omar, who happens to hold shchita she'eino ruya lo shama shchita. A slaughtering that does not result in your ability to eat from the meat is not called slaughtering. And in order to be mechayev, in order to obligate the offender to pay 4 or 5, he has to do an act that's, he has to do a slaughtering, a recognized slaughtering, in order to generate the 4 or 5 payment. Merely killing the animal is not enough. According to Rabbi Shimon, when is slaughtering called slaughtering? It's not by merely moving the knife over the animal's neck. The physical action, as far as Rabbi Shimon is concerned, is not the determining factor. The determining factor in defining something as slaughtering is your ability to eat from that slaughtered meat. In the case of a slaughtering done on Shabbos, so we're working right now with the assumption that you can't eat from that meat. But that's not so clear, as we will see as we go on in the Gemara. The Gemara asks, Amri, Bishlamo Avodizora Vishor Haniskal. Examples 2 and 3 in the source above. Those are clearly shchita she'ena ruyahi. Those are cases that the slaughtering is one that that the meat is not ruya, is not fit for eating. It's a slaughtering that doesn't result in your ability to eat the meat. Something that's slaughtered for idolatrous purposes becomes osur bahanah, forbidden to even benefit from. An animal that's sentenced to stoning is something forbidden to benefit from. So obviously, that's clearly shchita she'ena ruya. Ela Shabbos shchita ruya hi. But when it comes to slaughtering on Shabbos, yes, we acknowledge there's a Shabbos violation. But the meat is permissible to eat. That's the thinking right now. Disnan hashoichet b'Shabbos u'b'Yom Kippurim. One who slaughters on Shabbos or on Yom Kippur, afal pishim is chayev b'nafsho, even though he's ultimately going to pay with his life. Shchita sokshera. The shchita is kosher. It's an acceptable shchita. Namely, you can eat the meat. So the chachomim who exempt from the payment when the shchita is done by someone else, why is there an exemption from payment? Amri, We answer, Sovar law, that's a reference to Rabbi Shimon, holds Rabbi Yochanan HaSadlar, that Shechita on Shabbos, in fact, is not fit for eating. Rabbi Shimon then holds like Rabbi Yochanan HaSadlar. This non, and we have a Tanaic source. There are three Tanaic opinions that are brought, cited here. The third one, we've dashed, underlined his name so to draw your attention to his opinion. He speaks about food that's prepared on Shabbos through Shabbos violation, and he says there, it cannot be eaten. You're not allowed to eat it. This not. Let's see the whole source. Hamavashel b'Shabbos, one who cooks on Shabbos. The idea of cooking on Shabbos is parallel to the idea of slaughtering on Shabbos in the context of our Gemara. In other words, a Shabbos violation that's associated with food preparation. So the first opinion says b'shogeg yochal. If the food was cooked on Shabbos inadvertently, b'shogeg means without intent of violating Shabbos, it can be eaten even by the offender himself. B'mezid lo yochal, if it was done with intention, he cannot eat it, nor can others eat it. Divrei Rebbe Meir. That's Rebbe Meir's opinion. Rebbe Yehuda Omer, b'shogeg yochal b'moitzoy Shabbos. If the cooking was done inadvertently on Shabbos, it can be eaten Saturday night, at the end, after Shabbos passes, and b'mezid lo yochal elomis. If the Shabbos violation was done intentionally, with knowledge and intentionally, then it cannot be eaten forever. Rabbi Yochanan HaSadlar Omer, b'shogeg, if the Shabbos cooking violation was done inadvertently, yochal l'moitzoy Shabbos l'chem v'lo lo, others have a right to eat it, but not the offender. B'mezid, if it was done with intention, lo yochal l'ilomis l'iloy v'lo l'cherim, it cannot be eaten, not by the offender himself, nor by others. My taima de Rabbi Yochanan HaSadlar. What's the basis of Rabbi Yochanan HaSadlar forbidding the food that was cooked on Shabbos? K'dedorash Reb Chiya apischa de bein asiya. As Reb Chiya explained at the entrance to the house of the leader. The Nesiyah was the leader of the Jewish community. So Rabbi Chiya taught over there the following. Here we have a long point. Ushmartem es haShabbos ki kodesh lachem. The pasuk says, and you shall observe the Shabbos because it is holy unto you. Ma kodesh osur b'achila, just like something that is sanctified is not permissible for one to eat. Af maisa Shabbos asurin b'achila. So too, food that was prepared through Shabbos violation, maisa Shabbos, actions that are forbidden on Shabbos that were done to prepare the food, the food is rendered forbidden to eat. E ma kodesh osur b'hano, af maisa Shabbos osur b'hano. If just like that which is sanctified is forbidden to even benefit from, is food prepared on Shabbos in that same category forbidden to benefit from? Talmud Loimar, the posuk that we read, said lochem, shelochem yehe. In other words, if something was, food was prepared on Shabbos through a Shabbos violation, you're entitled to benefit from it, but you're not entitled to eat from it. Yochol afilu b'shogeg, is that true even if it was, it would be prohibited to eat even if the Shabbos violation were done without intention? Talmud Loimar, the Pasuk says in the same context, Mechale mois yumos, the violators of Shabbos shall be executed. And when is their execution? B'mezid omarti lofalo b'shogeg. Since the whole context of the Pasuk is within the context of a deliberate, knowing, intentional Shabbos violation. And that results in the food being prepared through Shabbos prohibition as being prohibited to eat. We should have cited earlier the pasuk quoted on the side of the Gemara, where you can see, let's read it anyway. Ushmartem es Shabbos ki kodesh lochem mechalaleo moisimos ki chola oise bo malocha v'nichrusu anefesh shehi mikerav ameha. So in this pasuk, you saw the comparison to kodesh, to something sanctified, and you saw that the pasuk is speaking about a capital offense or a deliberate offense which results in a capital punishment, and hence the distinction between shogeg, an inadvertent violation, versus mazid, intentional violation. So now, why did we cite all of this? This was as far as explaining the shita of Rabbi Shimon, who stands behind the Chachomim exempting above, on the grounds that the shchita that was done was a shchita she'ena ruya. It's a shchita that was done on Shabbos, and hence it results in the meat being prohibited to eat, and as such, we call it again to repeat shchita she'ena ruya. You can't eat from it, and therefore, according to Rabbi Shimon, it's not called shchita, and hence it's not a violation of the Torah's utvachoi, the word in the Torah that results in the thief paying 4 or 5. It's not an act of shchita. He didn't do that. He didn't do shchita, hence no 4 or 5 payment. Having introduced the issue of Shabbos and prohibitions in eating, pligi bo Rav Acha v'Ravina. There's a disagreement between Rav Acha and Ravina. Chadom or Maisa Shabbos d'Oraisa. One says that the Maisa Shabbos, the prohibition or the violation of food preparation on Shabbos is a Torah level offense. In other words, the prohibition of eating is prohibited on a Torah level. The Chadom or Maisa Shabbos d'Rabbanan. The other opinion says that it is rabbinic. Man d'omar d'oraisa k'damaron, the one who says that it's a Torah prohibition. We've explained that already. We just explained how you see that in the verse, making it Torah level. Man d'omar d'rabbanon, the one who says that the prohibition that we impose on the food prepared through Shabbos violation is only rabbinic. What about the pasuk? Omar kra, the pasuk says kodesh he kodesh. The Ein Maaseh HaKodesh. Shabbos is holy, but the actions done on Shabbos are not viewed as we view something holy, namely prohibited. So the day itself is holy. However, the Maaseh that are done on Shabbos are not prohibited. In other words, I should say that, of course, the actions are prohibited, but the result of the actions are not prohibited. That's as far from the Torah's standpoint. Now that we've introduced these two opinions, we're going to work them into our discussion above. Bishlamo lamandama daraisa. I understand, according to the opinion that says that the resultant food from the Shabbos violation is prohibited on a Torah level, so that the Isur Achila of Shchitas Shabbos is prohibited on a Torah level. We continue at the top of Omid Beis, Lohachi. Therefore, Patri Rabbonon, the Rabbonon exempted payment of the 4 or 5 for something slaughtered on Shabbos. Look, you slaughter on Shabbos, you can't eat it. It's Shchita Sheina Ruya. On a Torah level, it's not Shchita. Therefore, if there's no Shchita, so there's no 4 or 5 payment. Ela Laman De'amar De'Rabbanan, but according to the opinion that said that the Maisa Shabbos, the prohibition of eating it, is only rabbinic. But on a Torah level, you can eat it. On a Torah level, the Shchita was a good Shchita. It was a Shchita HaRuya. Amai Patri Rabbonon. Why, in the source that we read on Omid Aleph, if it's hard to find it, because we're getting a little, we're moving far away from it, use the little star that we have indicating Omid Aleph. And back in that source, you said, we read Chachom and Potrin, and we tried to explain they exempt from the financial restitution because it was not a Shechita. But according to the opinion that the prohibition is only rabbinic, the prohibition of eating from the Shabbos violation food is only rabbinic, on a Torah level, it's a totally good shvita. Why would they exempt the thief from paying the 4 or 5? The Gemara says, you're 100% correct. He's not exempt. Ashara, the expression potrim in that source is going on the other offenses. Number 2, Avodah Zorah, and number 3, Ushvishar Haniskal. It's referring to the shechita of an animal that was, the animal was stolen and was slaughtered for idolatrous purposes. Okay, that's Osir Bano. You can't eat from it. Or Ashar Haniskal is an animal Osir Bano. You can't benefit from it, so you can't eat from it. Those are cases where the shechita is a non-shechita. But the Shabbos, in fact, the Rabbanan, agree that you have to pay. The Gemara asks a question for Rebbe Meir. And before we go further, let's glance at the side. We have a mivneh, structural note. We're short. We're going to see diamonds highlighting the words Avodah Zorah and then later Shor HaNiskal. The Gemara on the side, we've written Shtei Kushios, two questions. Amai Mechayev Rebbe Meir Tashlum Al Ganav Why does Rabbi Meir impose payment, the 4 or 5 payment in that source back on Omen Aleph, in the case of slaughtering for idolatrous purposes or slaughtering a Shor Niskal? Dehem Isure Hano. They're prohibited to benefit from. They're not even considered owned by anybody. Once you have something that you can't benefit from, it's considered unowned. It's ownerless. And if that's the case, so why is there a need to pay the 4 or 5? The Gemara for Rebbe Meir, Amai Mechayev Shoychet Lavoidah Zorah. Why is there payment for a case of someone who stole an animal and then slaughters it for idolatrous purposes? Granted, the initial theft, I can understand you have to pay for that, but when it's slaughtered for idolatrous purposes, kevan deshachad bapurta osra. As soon as you insert your knife into the animal's neck in an act of slaughter, just a little bit, even before you actually kill it, you just shachad bapurta means you slaughtered a little bit. Osra means you've rendered it forbidden to benefit from it. And it's called, in Rashi you can see the expression, zivche mesim. That's an expression meaning something that you cannot benefit from. Idoch, the continued slaughtering, isure hanohu, velo demore kotovach. It's prohibited to benefit from that, and hence the continued slaughtering, you're slaughtering an animal that wasn't its owner's animal. In other words, it's not owned. A critical piece of information is not, you don't see that in the words of the Gemara, but Rashi fills it in. The Torah uses the word utvochoi. And utvocho means it's slaughtered in its entirety while owned by an owner. Which means that at the end of the slaughtering, it should still be owned by somebody. Owned, when we speak of you're owning something, it's something that you can benefit from. Otherwise, what's the sense of owning something you can't benefit from? So, in the case of slaughtering for idolatrous purposes, the second you make even a slight incision in the neck, that's not a complete act of slaughtering, but that does render the animal prohibited to benefit from. The continued act of slaughtering is you're slaughtering something that's osir b'hanah, that's not considered owned. And the Torah, when it obligates 4 or 5 for slaughtering, says, utvacho, slaughtering in a complete fashion, something that is owned. It's owned even at the end. Omar Rava. And Rava appears with a double underline, and on the side we indicate these are Tshuvos she Rava Anah. Rava will be answering the two questions that we're presenting. Here's the first question being answered. Rava says, "Be'omer," where the person slaughtering says, he announces, "Be'gmar zvicha hu ovda." Only the act of idolatry, which renders the animal prohibited, is not evidenced until the very end, because he announces, "I have no intention of serving the idol until the very end." Ah, well then, that means that up till that point, it was an owned animal, wasn't aser bahana, and therefore you have the fulfillment of utuvacho, the owned animal being slaughtered, and at the end you're announcing for avodah zarah. That certainly at that point, the animal, only at that point, only at the very end, will it be rendered aser bahana. Only then is it prohibited to benefit from it. And then, therefore, just to repeat the main point, is that therefore Rabbi Meir holds that you have to pay, you're chayav to pay. We continue. Shor haniskal, the case of an animal that's sentenced to be executed. Isuri hanoninu, it's something that you're not allowed to benefit from. Lav demore kotovach. And the same question we asked before, essentially, is that you're slaughtering something that's not owned by someone. The Gemara answers, and here we have a long answer marking. Omar Rava. Hocha b'mayaskinon. Here in the Tanaic source that spoke about slaughtering of a Shoran Yiskal that results in 4 or 5 is Kegain Shemosroi L'Shoimer. An animal was given to a guard, to a Bailey. Watch my animal. Vehizik beveis hashomer, vehua beveis hashomer, venigmardino beveis hashomer. The animal killed someone. Hizik means it caused damage. It killed someone, which would result in the animal being sentenced to stoning. Testimony was said on the animal while in the house of the shomer, while under his domain. And the final ruling of the court took place while the animal was still in the shomer's, in the guard's domain. That's background. And now, further background. For Rabbi Meir, Sovar lo ki Rabbi Yankiv, for Sovar lo ki Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Meir, who says, you're chayav to pay, he comes up with that ruling by combining two other Tanaic points of view. Rabbi Yankiv and Rabbi Shimon. Sovar lo ki Rabbi Yankiv, he always like Rabbi Yankiv domar, af mishe nigmar dinoi, hechziru shomer lebailim muhser. Rabbi Yankiv holds that in a case we described above, an animal that was given to a shomer is obviously expected to return the item that he was given. In the case described above, an animal was sentenced to be executed. Rabbi Yankiv says, if the shomer were to return that animal that was sentenced to death and return it to the owner, he has fulfilled his financial, his civil responsibilities toward the owner of the item. He can say, here's your animal. Even though the animal's not worth anything, the return is recognized. V'sovar lo k'Rabbi Shimon, and Rabbi Meir holds, like Rabbi Shimon as well, d'yomar, dovar ha-goyreim l'mamon k'mamon domi. Something that literally causes money to be paid. We'll explain this in further detail shortly by going through the Rashi, but let's try to get a feeling, a taste of the principle. Something that, though it itself has no value, like an animal sentenced to death, but if that shomer doesn't return the animal, he nevertheless has a a financial, a civil obligation to the owner of the animal. He has to return something to the animal. What's he going to return? If he doesn't return the animal itself, he'll have to return cash. So the animal has that aspect of potentially causing money to be paid. In the absence of its return, the shomer will have to pay money. Something that has that identity, namely, though it itself has no value, it's usur to benefit from it, but it's the absence of it would cause money to be shelled out, so it's kimamon, it's considered like something of value. And therefore, what was raised as a question before, that the shor haniskal was something that's not owned, that's not true. It's something that is viewed as having value. Once again, even though the animal itself has no value in the sense that it cannot be, you cannot benefit from it, but it could cause money to be paid out, that's enough to consider it mamon, something of value and something owned. And here the Gemara gives you the background for Rabbi Shimon's idea of Dovra Gurm Lamamon Kimamon Dami Disnan. Rabbi Shimon Oimer Kodshim Shechayev Bachriyuson Chayev. Kodshim are sacrifices. An animal, a person sanctified, dedicated an animal as a sacrifice. And the initial dedication was stated as follows. A man says, Hare olai oila. I accept upon myself to bring a burnt offering. When you say Hare olai, that means I accept upon myself. That means if anything should happen to the animal, that owner will have to make good on it. He'll have to repay the Beis HaMikdash with another sacrifice. That responsibility is called achrayus. So Reb Shimon says regarding kochim shechayev bachriyuson, someone, imagine someone stole a korban, a sacrifice that the owner had dedicated in that fashion whereby he accepted responsibility, and a thief stole it, and let us say he then sold it, he stole and then sold it, or stole and sacrificed. Without getting in too many details about the sacrificing aspect, but that will obligate the thief to pay 4 or 5 times. He pays the double for the theft, and he'll pay the additional twice for the sale. Now, the animal, once it was dedicated by the owner, does it belong to the owner? No, it belongs to the Beis HaMikdash. However, we said before, if anything happens to that animal, the owner will have to make good on it. Alma, we continue in the Gemara, Dovar HaGurim L'mamon, K'mamon Dami. We see from Rabbi Shimon's stated opinion by the Kodshim Shechayev Bachriyuson, the thief is Chayev, Kefel, and 4 or 5, even though it had itself no inherent value to the owner. It was prohibited. It's kachim, it's sanctified. But its absence would cause the owner to pay out. Therefore, it's considered like mamon. And then, you, of course, as we did before, you take to assemble all of this information. Namely, Rabbi Meir holds like Rabbi Yankiv that the owner, that the shomer could have returned the sentenced ox to the owner, and that he would have been thereby fulfilling his obligations, and that in the absence of doing so, he would have had to pay out money. That, based on accepting Rabbi Shimon, imposes upon the creature as if it's of value. And therefore, when it is slaughtered, it's considered having slaughtered something belonging to the owner. We continue in the Gemara. Omar Rav Kahana, the upcoming couple of lines we will see is focusing on that which we learned in the Mishnah, that one who stole and then slaughtered on Yom Kippur, the resultant 4 or 5 payment is made, and we set that up at the beginning of this sukkah. We set it up like Rebbe Meir, and in saying that it's like Rebbe Meir, it sounds as if we're saying it's like Rebbe Meir and not like Rebbe Shimon, for example. It's like Rebbe Meir alone. So now that was said here. Omar Rav Kahana, Amrisa Lishmaitza Kamei de Rav Zvid Min Arda. I said this over to Rav Zvid. And the question came up. Now, Mi Motzis Mukmis Masnisin Kerebi Meir Veloka Rebbe Shimon. Can you set up our Mishnah that said, Gona V'Tovach on Yom Kippur is Chayav Dalet V'Hei, like Rebbe Meir alone and not like Rebbe Shimon? We said it's like Rebbe Meir, who holds, so we're talking about Yom Kippur, who holds Loike U'Mishalim. So that part of the Mishnah, we were given the impression, is like Rebbe Meir, and Rebbe Shimon would not agree. Ha ha. Katani Seifa, Rebbe Shimon Poter Vishne Elu. The Mishnah back on Daf Ayin Omen Aleph. You can see at the end of the Mishnah, Rabbi Shimon exempts Bishnei Elu. And we indicated that was the, if you look back at the Mishnah, the case of Shochef and Nimseis Trefa or Chulin Bazora, there Rabbi Shimon exempts. So by saying there Rabbi Shimon exempts from payment, Michlal Debekula Masnisin Maida. That leaves you to conclude that with regard to the rest of the Mishnah, he agrees, including the case of Gona V'Tovach B'Yom Kippur, that you're Chayav Dalet V'Hei. So why at the beginning of this sugya did we say that our Mishnah is in accordance with Rebbe Meir? Sounds like Rebbe Meir and not like anyone else. But it would seem very likely that Rabbi Shimon agrees. It's true he exempted, but only two specific cases. The Gemara says, no, this assumption that regarding the rest of the Mishnah, he agrees that there is obligation, that's not accurate. Amar lei lo. So he answers that's not so. When we say that he concedes Michlal de Moide, yes, and he is Moide betovach umochar, that's where a person had stolen and then slaughtered for health purposes, or he slaughtered for the dogs. There, Rabbi Shimon agrees, you would be chayav to pay. So that I Rabbi Shimon exempts. And if you go back to the Mishnah itself, so we had a numbering scheme back on Daf Ayin Omer Aleph. Rabbi Shimon poter b'shnei means he exempts from payment, examples 3 and 4. He obligates payment in cases 1 and 2, as we marked off in the Mishnah Refu and Klovim. But as far as Gona V'Tovach B'Yom Kippur, there Rabbi Shimon will exempt. And therefore only Rabbi Meir is the one that says Chayev. And just to repeat, that's based on Rabbi Meir's opinion of Loike U'Mishalem, that even though he's going to, he's subjected to the penalty of lashing, he's also subjected to the obligation to pay the 4 or 5. Gonav Mishel Oviv, V'Tovach U'Mochar V'Chulei. Our Mishnah spoke of a case where a son stole from his father and then slaughtered it, and then the father died, so he has to pay the 4 or 5 payment. On the side of the Gemara, we have an Osei topic heading. It reads as follows: Gonav Shor Shoshnei Shutfin Utvochai. Man stole an ox that was owned by partners, by two people. The thief then arranged for its slaughtering. And then, v'chuydelechad mehem. The thief then confessed to one of the partners, you know, I stole and slaughtered the animal that you have a holding in. V'achagach bo'edim, and then witnesses came testifying about the offense, about the theft and slaughtering. Ha'im chayev l'shutav hasheni, is this thief chayev to pay the for the other partner to whom he did not confess his share? Granted that to the one partner to whom he confessed, we have a rule: moide b'knas, when you confess an offense that results in a knas payment or knas type punishment, but you confessed before witnesses came, you're thereby exempt. And knas in general is a type of payment that does not reflect the actual value of what was done. And when you have to pay double the price, double the value, obviously that's not the value itself, it's double the value. So that's called a knas payment. And when you confess it, you gain exemption. So to the partner to whom he confessed, he's exempt. The question here is, what about the obligation to pay to the other partner to whom he didn't confess, and witnesses showed up with their testimony, their condemning testimony? So now when we go through the Gemara, you're going to notice that we have an aleph and a beis, and those will be presenting essentially two Lishonos Hafuchos Shel Tshuvas Rav Nachman, two opposite answers of Rav Nachman. The Gemara. Bo minei Rava mirav Nachman. Rava asks, Gonav Shor Shel Shnei Shutfin Utvachoi, man stole an ox belonging to two partners, then slaughtered it. The Hoida Le'echod Mehen Mahu, and he confessed to one of the partners, what is the din? We mentioned that the basic confession is called Moide B'Knas. Is he Chayav to pay the other one to whom he did not confess and witnesses showed up? Now, the question itself has two sides of analysis. Do you say Chamisha Bokar Omer Achmona? The Torah speaks about paying five times the value of the ox. That's Chamisha Bokar. If a person stole and then slaughtered the Bokar, the cow, the ox, he pays five times its value. That's what the Torah says. Chamisha Bokar Omar Rachmona Velo Chamisha Chatzoi Bokar. Not five halves of a cow. So that, according to this, the payment of five times will be only if you're making it in full. But since you confessed to one partner and that you're not going to pay, you're not going to pay the other partner either, because if you're paying the other partner, that would be five halves of the animal. Or maybe Chamisha Bokum Rachmona, Vafilu Chamisha Chatzoi Bokur. Maybe the Pasuk description of five Bokur is not to the exclusion of five halves, but five halves also you'll have to pay. Omarle, Rav Nachmon answers, Chamisha Bokum Rachmona, Velo Chamisha Chatzoi Bokur. So here, this is Rav Nachmon's first approach. This is the first Lashon. I want to apologize and minor change in the markings. I want to call this Roman numeral number 1, and at the bottom line, we're going to call it Roman numeral number 2 instead of the Aleph and Beis marking that I referred to before. The reason for that change is I want to use the Aleph and Beis in the presentation of the question, the two sides of the question, as we just did. So Rav Nachman then, and this is version number 1, he says, Chamisha Bokum Rachmona Velo Chamisha Chatzoi Boker. So Rav Nachman is saying exemption. You don't pay the partner the his share in this. You'll notice if you skip to the bottom line where Rav Nachman, we say this is version number 2, and we dashed underline in the middle, V'afilu chamisha chatzei boker. There Rav Nachman simply reverses what he said now, and there he says you that the thief is obligated to pay the partner his percentage, the half that's due to him. Now the Gemara continues. Esfei. We're going to be using a triangle scheme. We started one already. And on the side of the Gemara, you see under the Mivneh heading, with the point facing up, that represents a response. The inverted triangle represents a kushya, a question. We'll be using a crown shape to highlight the terms Mishalem versus Eino Mishalem. The markings will be helpful as we go on in the actual give and take in the Gemara. So, Rav Nachman said that when you confess to one of two partners and not to the other one, he says you don't have to pay the other partner his half in the multiple payment. Esfei, we raise an objection. This is what we're labeling this the Reisha. It's a quote from our Mishnah, and the term Reisha is in contrast to the term Seifa that you'll find on the fifth wide line, which is a reference to the Mishnah on Daf Ayin Dalet Amid Beis later on. So the Seifa means end. So that relative to our Mishnah, that's the continuation, but the end of the Mishnah. Esfei, Gonav Mishel Oviv, V'tovach U'mochar, man stole from his father and then slaughtered it. V'achakach Meis Oviv, and later the father died. Mishalem Tashlumi Arba V'chamisha, payment must be made. He has to pay 4 or 5. He'll pay to the other brothers that inherit that along with him inherit from the father. V'ahacha Kevon de Meis Oviv. In this case, once the father dies, this son, who happens to be a thief, he inherits his portion. It's kamo on his own portion. Obviously, you don't pay yourself. So, it's kamo shekita v'chida le'echod meham domi. It's like the case that we presented before, that was presented to Rav Nachman, where the thief admits to one of the partners. Here, when the father dies, he becomes a partner, and he's like, he's admitting to himself, but he's admitting to one of the partners. So that you're not going to have a full payment of 4 or 5 made. So the Gemara says, once the father dies, it's kemo shekida v'hida le'echod me'am domi. It's like the case above, where he admitted to one of the partners. V'kotoni mishalein tashlume arba v'chamisha. And in this source it says, payment must be made. Now we dashed underline mishalem in contrast with two lines above where he said velo chamisha chatzei boker, namely no payment is made. So from our Mishnah we have a kasha on Rav Nachman's ruling. Omar lei, so Rav Nachman answers, hocha b'mayaskinon. Our Mishnah is talking about a unique situation. Kedain she'omad oviv bedin. Before the father died, the father brought the case to court. Once a case is brought to court, there's no more confession option available. So that you don't have a parallel in the citation from the Mishnah to the case that Rav Nachman was answering. Avol. We ask a question. Lo omad bedin mai. In the very case above, with the son stealing from father, let's say there was no omad bedin. There was no father going to court. So what do you have? You have gonav v'tovach. A person would have stolen and then slaughtered his father's animal. And then confessed. And then his father died. if there was no Omad Bedin, and simply, I think that for, I inserted the word confessed. I don't think that you have to have that, because when the father dies and there was no Omad Bedin, so he in effect inherits a portion of it. So according to the inference from what you, Rav Nachman, said, that if there was no Omad Bedin, so then Eino Mishalem Tashlume Arba V'Chamisha, because it would have been Chatzoi, it would have been Chamisha Chatzoi Boker, and you said that is not paid. So if that's correct, that within the very example of Gonav Mishel Oviv V'Tovach, and then the father dies, within that scenario, you have two possibilities. You've got Mishalem, that's if it's Omad Bedin. And within that same scenario, if it wasn't Omad Bedin, you would say Eino Mishalem. Then E Hachi, if that be the case, Adetoni Seifa, instead of teaching in the Seifa on Daf Ayin Dalamid Beis a case of Eino Mishalem, but it's already a different scenario. What does it say in the Seifa? Gonav Mishel Aviv Umeis V'Achar Kach Tovach Omochar. The theft from the father, and then the father died before the slaughtering took place. So the Mishnah says, "Eino mishalim tashlum arba v'chamisha." There's no payment of four or five. Why change the scenario in order to be able to teach Eino mishalim exemption from paying? Nifloik b'didei, stay within the topic or the example of slaughtering during the father's life, and say, Bamed Bamamurim, when does payment have to be made? Kishomad Bedin, if the father took the case to court. Avolo Amad Bedin, if there was no court appearance. Eino Mishalim Teshlomi Arba V'Chamisha, because that would have been, we call a Chamisha Chatzoi Bokar. So why, if you, Rav Nachman, are correct that in the absence of Omad Bedin, there would have been an exemption of paying based on Chamisha Chatzoi Bokar, why, in order to teach a case of Eino Mishalem, you have to change the scenario? Omar Lehochinami, Rav Nachman says, you know, you're right, that technically the Mishnah didn't have to change the scenario. Rather, if there was no Omad Bedin, there would be exemption. Aidi denosiv resha, since the resha presented as an example of slaughtering and then father dying, the case of gonav mishel oviv v'tovach u'mochar v'achar kach meis oviv. So in contrast, nosiv seifa nami, the seifa gives a contrasting case of where the father dies and then the slaughtering takes place. Gonav mishel oviv u'meis oviv v'achar kach tovach u'mochar. But it's not to the exclusion of an exemption of paying, even when the slaughtering takes place while the father is still alive. Assuming that the father did not take the case to court, there would, and then after the slaughtering, the father died and it had not been taken to court, it would have been exempted because he inherits his part of the animal. The payment would be a payment to the other heirs, but it's not a complete payment. His share of it, of course, he doesn't pay himself. That comes under the realm of Chamisha Chatzoi Bokar, and as Rav Nachman taught, that the Torah doesn't obligate a person to pay that way. Letzafra, the next morning, Omar Le Chamisha Bokar Rachmona V'Afilu Chamisha Chatzoi Bokar. In the morning, Rav Nachman changed his opinion, total reversal, and says that the Torah says you've got to pay even five times the animal, even if it's partial. And therefore, in the case of someone confessing to one of two partners and not to the other, and witnesses come with their inflammatory testimony, the offender will have to pay the other partner his five halves of the value of the animal. V'hai de lo amri loch beurta, Rav Nachman explains his his change. Why it, yesterday evening, urta means last night. Urta literally is nighttime. Why last night I didn't say this? The Gemara continues at the top of the Ayin Beis. The lo achli bisra the Torah. Rashi, the Tosfos says, Shori b'tainisoy. I was in the middle of a fast. I was fasting. And a person is fasting, it diminishes his clarity of thought, and therefore I gave you an answer that was not clear. The lo achli bisra the Torah, I didn't have to translate that, means I didn't eat ox meat. Rashi says, the lo achli bisra the Torah, lo dikdakti tamo shadavar. I was not thorough in my analysis initially. And my own explanation is that the analogy of Bisra de Tura can be based on a Gemara in Shabbos, which is found in Daf Mem Beis Amud Beis, which indicates that ox meat, in order to become edible, requires an extensive amount of cooking. It's apparently very tough meat, and in order to be able to eat it, you've got to chew it very, very well, and hence the analogy to something that you analyze. You say you chewed it over very well, and chewing very well is characteristic of the way you eat ox meat. And Rav Nachman is saying here, I didn't do that, and hence my first answer was not accurate. The Gemara asks, "V'elo mai shno reisha u'mai shno seifa?" In order to appreciate this question, we look at Rashi. U'mai shno seifa, kevon de reisha, in the reisha of that means the Mishnah, our Mishnah, which spoke about slaughtering and then the father dying. The Mishnah said payment must be made, and that indicated even Chamisha Chatzoi Bokar. And since in the Reisha, payment is made afilu lo omad bedin, kom rachmona de Chamisha Bokar vafilu Chamisha Chatzoi Bokar, Seifa, the Mishnah on the Ayin Dalmid Beis, kishemeis oviv, v'achar kach tovachu mochar, the father died first. Then, at that point, all the brothers inherit the animal. And then the thief brother slaughters it. The Mishnah there said, exemption. Loma lo yishalim lechov eschelkom. Why should he not pay their portion? Once we, according to what Rav Nachman is saying now, we don't need the issue of Omad Bedin anymore. We established that Hamisha Chatzei Boker is to be paid. Why then in the Seifa, where you have a similar situation, that it would be Hamisha Chatzei Boker, pay the brother their portion, why does it say no payment need be made? Answer, Omar Le, Reisha, in the Reisha where payment is made, Karina be utvachoi, kuloi be isura. When did the slaughtering take place? While the father was still alive, he had no holding in it whatsoever. It was slaughtered completely in a prohibited fashion, meaning since he had no holding in it, it was completely someone else's, his father's. So the entire slaughtering was be'isur. And the word utuvacho in the Torah implies something that's complete. As Rashi says, kulo mashman, it's an element of entirety, or completion. So in the reisha, where the slaughtering took place while the animal was still the father's, he had no part of it whatsoever, therefore payment is made. Seifa, where first the father died before the slaughtering took place. At the point the slaughtering took place, this thief brother had a share in it. So you can't describe it. The lo karino be utvache kulo bisura. We cannot refer to it as a slaughtering that was completely prohibited. a part of the animal was his own. So that part of the animal, so to speak, was a permissible slaughtering. And the Torah doesn't obligate the 4 or 5 payment unless it's a slaughtering that's done in a completely prohibited fashion. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.